Hi, welcome to Off Script. I'm Zach Lewis.
And I'm Dr. Draper.
Today on the show, Supergirl, the new DC movie is out. We've seen it. Does it hold a candle to what Superman was doing last summer? Is it a big flop? I've seen some box office numbers. We're going to get into Supergirl. We're also going to take a look at Jackass Best and Last. We kind of thought about skipping this one, but I'm a bit of a Jackass stan. I'm going to be honest, and I really wanted to see it, so we watched it. Interesting. Jackass Best and Last. Stick around for the Jackass Best and Last review. We can take a look at some upcoming trailers, namely Werewolf from Robert Eggers. We got the new Timothy Chalamet, Selena Gomez movie, Not Alone from Illumination. I know it's a kids movie, but also, dude, Illumination is like the King Midas of kids movies right now. They can't flop. They can't stop. They're like what Pixar used to be. So I'm looking forward to talking about it. Before we get to everything, we're going to talk about some stories this week. First story, Backrooms Extended Version is coming to theaters with an extra 15 minutes of 16 minutes, excuse me, of bonus footage. I read on Twitter. Variety's got it wrong here. What do you know about this, Andy?
Right. So in in another effort of hucksterism, A24 is releasing not an extended cut, but they're calling it the All Things, Everything Must Go edition of Backrooms, the hit horror movie from 21-year-old Kane Parsons. Now, all what we know is that there's going to be, I think it's a post-credit scene. It's not any more footage like cut into the main movie. We're not getting extended sequences. I think it's a post-credit thing that I think also ties in a lot with the YouTube stuff. So it might be some more found footage, and it probably not going to relate to the movie as much. So I think that they're massaging the wording of this quite a bit.
Yeah, I saw Kane Parsons, the director, was on Discord talking about it. And he was like, look, I don't want you to think this is some incredibly important new thing. It isn't. But if you're a fan of the YouTube series, you'll probably like what's happening here. I'm with Andy. I'm not exactly sure where it is in the movie. I think it's at the end. But I did think it would be really funny if it was just 16 minutes of just casually inserted additional backroom shots, like just little cutaways and stuff, like when they're already down there, and then you get to the end of the movie and they're like, that's it, didn't you love it? And you're like, where was the extra footage? Oh, it was in there, you know what I mean? It was we just threw it in there. Nothing big, nothing serious, but hopefully something good. I'm not gonna go to the theater to watch this again, but I'm very much looking forward to somebody posting it on Twitter in like a month where I can watch it, you know, or like a cam rip or something important. Like, I'm sure we'll see a little bit of it. Not enough to get me to go back to the theater, but I kind of get why they're doing it. God, the movie's made so much money, $330 million on like just a $10 million budget. You know, like it's doing great. Love it. Get to Backrooms 2. You know what I mean? That's what's next for me. This is cool, but like, how about we spin up another project? I think he wants to make more. He's talked about wanting to do more in the universe. This is not the last time he's visiting the Backrooms. I don't know. Sounds cool. Bit of hucksterism, like you said. That's that. Can we talk about Palm? Oh, go ahead.
I was going to say that I'm very kind of excited about this, and I've already seen Backrooms twice in the theaters. I might go by mostly because it's a holiday weekend and I have some extra time.
Yeah.
And I'm not going to go see the Minions movie, so I might catch this and I'll report back on these extra 15 minutes.
Tragically, I'm a little interested in that Minions movie because it's like 1920s cinema or whatever. Like, they know what they're doing. They're getting the cinema heads out, but I'm not going to see that movie either. No, I got bigger plans for the fourth. We got to talk about Palme d'Or winner Fjord out of Cannes. We have a release date. Neon has set the release date for this Palme d'Or winner this year, and it is quite a hot date because it turns out it's the exact same day the last like three Best Picture winners have come out, October 9th. We talked a little about this movie before, Andy. What do you know about it?
So this is, I guess, the magic date for Neon. This is the same date that Parasite and Anora and Anatomy of a Fall all came out in their respective years, went on to win or be nominated for Best Picture. So it's kind of the magic awards season release date, I think, which is good because I think a lot of times, you know, you don't want to release it too late because then no one sees it. That happened to The Testament of Anne Lee, which came out like in late January and like the day before the nominations. And they're like, no one saw our movie. This is by Romanian director Christian Manju. Tells a story of a Romanian family who emigrates to Norway And there's a big culture clash. They're very religious. They don't really fit in. They are accused, the family, father, mother, are accused of child abuse because of these cultural differences. Sebastian Stan plays the father, and the great Renata Reinsva is the mother in this. Heard great things. And again, this was the Palme d'Or winner. That means there could be some Oscar nominations headed up. So super excited to really get a firm date. And again, that's October 9th.
You'd think coming hot off a Backroom Story, I'd have had a better segue with Renata Reinsva appearing in both films. But yeah, no, excited to see her back in like a prestigious foreign film, right? Like she just did Backrooms, which was like much more mainstream, and that was a, kind of a big step for her. So now we're back into like foreign film, perfect. Sebastian Stan will fit in great. It's the movie where Sebastian Stan's bald. It's a Sebastian Stan bald movie, if that makes any difference, if that helps you remember it at all. But yeah, them and their five kids moved to Norway. One of them has shows up at school with bruises. The five are immediately, I think, taken into custody away from them, and it turns into a whole legal saga. It's supposed to be a brilliantly knotted social drama, according to Variety. So yeah, I don't know. So it sounds like it could be a good time, but boy, October 9th has really turned into a Kingmaker sort of day. Two Best Picture winners, Anatomy of Fall was no slouch either. Seems like they got a lot of confidence in this one, not to mention it's the Palme d'Or winner. I guess people are going to be putting this on their top 10 lists, right? We might be putting it on a top 10 list, but the date is October 9th. That's when you can see it. That's when we're going to watch it, and we'll cover it right here on this podcast. So yeah, that's Fjord. Absolute Batman's getting made into a series. This is a whole thing. People don't know, Andy, what's Absolute Batman?
Yeah, so my worlds are colliding. Absolute Batman is a comic book series which launched in 2024. The reimagining of the character set in a universe where Batman is kind of the opposite of how he is. It's called Absolute because it is just him. He is not rich. He's a blue-collar working person. The mythos is kind of upended. Instead of both his parents dying, Batman's father dies in a tragic incident, but his mother is still alive into adulthood. There's also things like Alfred is like a MI6 agent. He's actually childhood friends with the people that turn out to be the Riddler, the Penguin, and Two-Face. So it kind of upends a lot of the Batman mythos. It's also very maximalist. Like everything is bigger and bolder, and like it's really brutal. It's like it's extremely violent, even for Batman. But Absolute Batman has been selling like crazy. Absolute Batman number one has had 11 reprintings. For context, a good selling comic might have 1 to 3 reprintings. So it's on 11, and the rest of the series is doing really well. They're on issue 20. The trades, which are the collections of these comics, volume 1 and 2 are out. If I highly recommend jumping into these are exciting comic books, really well written and great art. And to get back to the story, DC Studios is going to be doing an animated series of them, which I think is the perfect place. As much as we love Batman on the big screen, this would be a difficult adaptation to do. It's incredibly dark. It's very violent. It's not very kid-friendly at all. It's really well-written, and I think animation's a good place for it, so really excited that they're doing this and doing it so quickly.
Yeah, for those who aren't in the know on comics, and I'm not, I only read a few comics a year, but one of the comics I've read this year is Absolute Batman. I got the first two trade issues, so the first, like, 12-ish like issues of Absolute Batman in like two little bindings. And it's awesome. It's a great read. They're cheap. They're not expensive to get. A ton of fun to read. Very violent, very different. I have so little confidence in this being cool, like on a screen adaptation. And I think it's just because I so like the art style and the storytelling that is in that comic. And I don't know if it works. It's different. It's subversive. Like it is, there are chapters told in this comic, like that are very odd and very strange. A couple of them uniquely non-visual. There's one, I forget, issue 4 or 5, I think, that kind of centers around Batman fighting a character while also like seeing these flashbacks to like his past and some former friends who end up being bigger players in this Absolute Batman universe. And most of that story is told in silhouette. You can't even really see faces. Like you don't get any of that. So like, I don't know how you turn that into an episode of a show. Like that's going to have to be different. And no, uniquely, like I'm a little concerned because I don't love a lot of DC's current like cinematic animation offerings. It's just kind of flat. I know it's older. It's an older house style, and it kind of looks a little bit more like, I don't know, Batman the Animated Series used to, not even that. It's different than that now, I know. And like, they animated on computers, but like, I just, I see a clash coming between the art style of Absolute Batman the comic and DC Studios, who makes animated features. So like, what do you think about that? How do you think they're going to bridge that?
The style is kind of hit and miss. Sometimes it's just, it's a little too simple. Sometimes they do a good job. Like the adaptation of The Dark Knight Returns is pretty good. Some of the other ones, and then some of them are a little bit more like kiddified. So it all depends. But this, like I said, this is a huge hot selling comic book. You know, I think they're smart to capitalize on its popularity right away. And it's faster to get an animated show out than it is to get a whole, this would take 5 years to make into film, but you can strike while the iron's hot and get it on screen in animated form.
Well, that's true. And that's a good point. If it was a live action film, I'd be even more skeptical. So like, for what it's worth, I hope it's a banger. It is a super cool comic. Like you said, it is kind of the number one comic this year. Go read it. We both recommend it. It's solid. I know this isn't a comic book podcast, but like, it's a good read. Absolute Batman rips. One more story from the box office this week. Supergirl is maybe struggling a little bit, which is not great for those of us who are kind of rooting for her. But Toy Story 5 is still killing it. Tell us about the numbers.
Toy Story had a strong second week opening, 70 million domestic, 585 global. So that continues to be a big success. As we knew it would, it's going to probably be a $1 billion film. Supergirl came in below expectations at 38 million domestic, 68 million globally. It's probably, unfortunately, going to be a bomb. It's a very expensive movie, $170 million budget. So it was going to need to be in the probably $400 million range. It's not going to hit that, but well, we'll talk about that a little bit later. Obsession, which just hit VOD this week, continues to do well, 9.8 million domestic, 370 million globally. Like, this is going to be just short of a $400 million film, which is insane for a $1 million project. So check that out, now available on VOD. Jackass Best and Last came in fourth place with 8.4 million, 10.3 million global. These are cheap films. It was made for about $10 million, so they'll have no problem making that back. And to round out the top five, Disclosure Day with 9.1 million and 193 million globally. It's doing decently. It wasn't, it was just over a little bit of a $100 million budget. So it's doing fine. It's going to need to get closer to like 230 to be in profit territory. But it's Spielberg, and it'll probably have legs. It'll probably get a boost this weekend or over the holiday. So it's doing, you know, fine.
I'm really bummed about Supergirl. I wish it was doing better, but like, I get it. What I want to point to, what I want to say is the reason it's underperforming is because DC has lost the buzz they had with Superman a year ago. You know what I mean? Like, I remember walking out of Superman and thinking, God, I would have watched another half hour of that movie. If Supergirl was coming out 3 months from now, I'd buy a ticket today. Like, I couldn't wait to see it. If they could have staggered this in the winter and maybe made this a winter release and then had Clayface come out this summer, I think they would have had more momentum. Like, I know Clayface is supposed to be their next film. We're going to see how that does, but this one just kind of flopped. That's what I want to say is the big reason didn't work, is because they just lost that gusto, those vibrations everybody had coming out of Superman starring David Cornsweet. It's not still there. But realistically, I can't get around the fact that, yeah, it is a female-led superhero movie, and these things underperform, and that bums me out, and it sucks, and I'm glad I bought a ticket, and I'm glad I supported it. And if you went and saw Supergirl, I'm glad you supported it too. Like, because that's a good thing, I think. That's what we should do. But people aren't turning out for it. And I don't like it. It bums me out. And I wish I could wave my magic wand and make people come out to Supergirl, but they're not doing it. We'll talk about the quality of the movie here in just a second. Meanwhile, Toy Story 5 is still crushing it. Jackass is interesting. We're going to talk about Jackass, and that's the box office. Any other big stories?
Nothing from there. I did want to mention real quick, Belgium did manage to tie Senegal just now.
Oh, nice. Is the game on right now?
It's still going. Okay. They're going to be going into overtime. I can't believe it. Belgium was down 0-2 and they went back and tied it.
Tell you what, because I know this is a recorded product that people will see later and already know, but you and I are doing this live. A lesser podcast would say, turn that off. We're doing a show. Not here. Please update if they win or lose. Like, let us know here on the pod. Like, me and other, well, just me, really, but other people later might appreciate it, I guess. Maybe they hadn't heard yet. Maybe it'll be news to them. So, yeah, go Belgium, go. We're Belgium, right? We're rooting for Belgium?
Yes. In this game.
Go Belgium, go. All right, sick. Yeah. Senegal sucks at soccer, I guess. Anyway, we got to talk about some movies. Andy's going to be taking the summary on Supergirl here, so let me get out of his way. Andy, please, take it away.
Supergirl? So this is the second major release from the new DCU, headed by James Gunn, directed by Craig Gillespie, and written by Anna Nogueira. This follows Supergirl, who we met at the very end of the Superman film, which came out last summer, played by the great Millie Alcock, who you might remember or know from House of the Dragon season one. She was the breakout star in that role as young Queen Rhaenyra. In this, we find her celebrating her birthday somewhat reluctantly. She's kind of depressed. She's kind of down, and she's visiting a planet system in a very Star Wars-esque way that has a red sun. And we learn that a red sun makes her a little bit weaker, depowers her a little bit, and this enables her to get inebriated when she drinks, because otherwise she can't do that on Earth. And so she's, you know, celebrating this her 23rd, whatever. They make her above the legal drinking age. When she runs into a young girl named Ruthie, played by Eve Ridley, who's on a quest of vengeance. A brigand named Clem of the Yellow Hills has killed her family indiscriminately, and she enlists help. No one helps her initially. She asks Supergirl for help. She doesn't want to have anything to do with her either, but then she ends up tumbling with Krem, and Krem injures Krypto, the Superdog, which is in this film as well, and now they have to both team up together so she can get the antidote to save Krypto and also maybe get vengeance for Ruthie along the way. And it's a bit of a planet hopper, lots of action, lots of special effects. It's got some problems. It hasn't been well received. It is based on the comic book Supergirl Woman of Tomorrow, which came out about 4 years ago, written by Tom King, who's a very well-respected comic book writer. Lots to get into. Zach, what do you think?
So Supergirl doesn't really work for me, and it's hard. It's a little difficult for me to nail down why, because ultimately I think it is a perfectly serviceable superhero movie. It is totally fine. B plus, maybe even an A minus superhero movie. Solid B for sure. If you gave it a B minus, I'd say that's harsh. But the problem is there have been like 40 Marvel movies, 37 or something, now that I remember. And we have a bunch of DC movies too. Like, we have seen so many superhero movies over the last decade that I think the moment has kind of passed for big superhero movies for adults, right? Like, it just doesn't have the same zeitgeist it used to. These movies don't generate the same interest unless they're like a really big release, like a Batman or a Spider-Man or an Avengers, right? Even Superman, to an extent, had some gas behind him. So, like, just serviceable doesn't cut it anymore, and it doesn't get people out to the movies anymore. And just saying, yeah, it's fine. Yeah, it's a superhero movie. Like, it's just not it. I'd heard some early rumors that this was like Mad Max for superhero movies, right? It's just constant action. It's not, unfortunately. It's not that. There's a lot that works. There's a lot of cool stuff here. Some unique set design. I like Millie Alcock a lot. Jason Momoa is fun. But it kind of isn't better than the sum of its parts. And I think it's due to the script and maybe a little director Craig Gillespie. But yeah, where do you want to talk about it?
Oh, man. We can start with the plot. So like I said, this is loosely based on the Woman of Tomorrow's story arc, which is 8 issues, and which is a great, great story. It's a lot of fun. I was disappointed with this too, and I'm like the target audience for this. Like, I've read the comic. I love superhero stuff. I like Superman and Supergirl as characters. There's some interesting stuff. That comic gets really dark in some places. And while they definitely, a lot of things are inspired from, they're missing a lot of the main things. And what we get instead is a very kind of paint by number, a film that seemed like it went through the execs and committees and studio notes to death. Because it's just not very original, not very exciting. It can't decide what kind of movie it wants to be. We get the problem of having two protagonists you know, it's a lone wolf and cub, but we don't really get enough. We can't decide, is this the lone wolf story or the cub story? It should be Supergirl story because it's Supergirl. But it's a little bit all over the place. Jason Momoa is in it as Lobo. That's a new addition from the comic. Let's get into the story, I guess. So Krem of the Yellow Hills is the bad guy who has had kind of a character redesign. And we know he's a bad guy because he just looks super evil.
Yeah.
The very first thing he does in the opening scene is kill Ruthie's family indiscriminately. And then they kind of just have him doing evil things forever. And I was like, we get it. He's the bad guy. He's, I said this a couple weeks ago. They shoved in this like human trafficking plot line, which I said a couple of weeks ago. That's like the new hot thing to add to every movie if you want your bad guy to for everyone to know he's bad. Yeah. It's a hat on a hat. Like we already know, like he kills a bunch of people when we first meet him. And then they make him a sex trafficker as well. And I'm like, did we really need that? It's just all over the place.
He's tragically forgettable, and I know it's a bummer for DC because the actor behind Krem is Matthias Schoenaert, who is a big foreign actor apparently, and they'd hoped that he was going to pull some audiences overseas because apparently he's a much bigger deal over there. He's been in a few features that I have not seen, but yeah, here he's like kind of unrecognizable. I think like he's just covered in piercings and tattoos, shaved his head, contact lenses, and he ends up just being very villain of the week. It reminds me a lot of like Kate Blanchett and like Thor Ragnarok. Like she's got this big headpiece and it's supposed to be this big thing, and you're just like, dog, I don't care. Like you're just kind of this bad person who wants to do bad stuff. Millie Alcock's got a challenge at the front of the movie. She's supposed to be apathetic and depressed and not want to do anything and not like anything. And it's hard to be a likable hero and lead the movie when you have to do that. And she kind of gets pulled into this plot that she doesn't want to do by our, like you said, Wolf and Cub, our Cub character, played by Eve Ridley, who's a young actress who also kind of doesn't really work that good. Like she just kind of keeps making flubs and mistakes and you're like, God, we gotta have kid.
Very, very one here? Note.
Yes, yeah, it's a very kid actor being a kid actor. She's doing a good job. She's doing great. They should give her a Netflix show or something. I like the people in this. I think our trouble is our script. Ultimately, is I thought there was gonna be more Lobo in it. I remember when we first kind of talked about this idea for this movie a long time ago on this podcast. We heard news about it and we talked about using the Red Sun to weaken Supergirl. That was gonna be the idea, right? That if she's not on Earth, she's not super, she's normal. So we put her in a place where she doesn't have her powers, and then she has to struggle to get out. And that is a thing in this movie. And I thought Lobo or Bounty Hunter would be a bit more of a part of that, but it turns out Jason Momoa wasn't in this movie at all, and then they ran a cut for executives at Warner Brothers, and they were like, more Jason Momoa. Like, put him in the movie more. So had him back, like, for reshoots to add him in more. So not that I was looking forward to him the whole movie, but I was surprised at how little he's actually in the movie. Like, he's not actually in there as much as you might think, which maybe is good for Lobo and what they might do with that character. But what they have here, yeah, like, Superman seemed to be something that felt kind of grounded. Like it's a movie about being human, and Supergirl is not. It's a movie about being alien, and there's a ton of aliens in it. There's a ton of sets in it, of planet hopping, like you said, different ships, different places we go. And I thought that stuff all looked pretty good. I think that's where most of the money in the movie goes, because it's not a cheap feature. It's like $170 million or something to make. Like it's a pretty good looking movie if you're not talking about like the green screen action, which unfortunately, it's got a bit of green screen action. When Millie Alcock's flying around, it looks pretty bad. Not a very good looking CGI.
Yeah, the CGI is up and down. Sometimes it looks fine. Sometimes it doesn't look very good at all. I wanted to mention with Lobo, I feel like Jason Momoa, this is both him and also just the script. It's not very well written for the character. This should be the kind of character that walks on screen and steals the show. Like completely memorable, steals every scene. And it's just not, he's got the look, but I feel like he can't pick a lane, or the writers couldn't pick a lane for the character. Like,
yeah.
He's supposed to be wisecracking Peter Quill. I thought he was trying to do a British voice at one point. I feel like he does like three different voices with the character. He should be charming the pants off everyone when he's on screen, and he doesn't do that. And he doesn't, the action stuff isn't really cool enough. Ideally he's introduced here so that he can show up in the team up movie that is Man of Tomorrow, which is coming next summer. But it just doesn't work very well. Now that you mentioned that he was added even more, that kind of makes sense.
Yeah.
Because he's not in the movie very much. And when he is, it feels very, very shoehorned. And it turns out that it was. Ultimately, our plot is not very compelling. This kind of quest for revenge is supposed to be the main focus. And also, Supergirl is eventually supposed to convince her cub not to do this, not to seek revenge. That's not the kind of person you want to be. We don't really get a whole lot of that. The things that I did like were that it's very Star Wars for like the first half, like they're planet jumping, they're going into the cantina. And I think it's a very clear reference to Star Wars. There's a couple of Darth Vader references too, which I think were fine. It just doesn't patch it all together. There's some flashbacks to the destruction of Krypton, which I think is some of the best stuff in the movie. And I was like, that needs to be the whole movie, like this kind of writing, this kind of drama.
Yeah, surprising amount of that in a way that I didn't expect. But they do a good job of explaining why Supergirl is the age she is when she arrives at Earth versus like Clark, who was like a baby. They explain that time gap a little bit and give you a bit more of something to chew on. It's kind of a nice step away from the movie, honestly, because our main plot, our A plot, is just like hero has to go track down villain. Like there's this thing in there with Crypto, which is cool, but honestly, like maybe they could have had Crypto in the movie more, like instead of kind of putting him on the sideline. A fine through line for both features, both Superman and this though, Crypto. I mean, I think there is a bit of a power problem as well in this movie. Like they keep having to depower Supergirl. They keep having to nerf Supergirl throughout the feature. Like they have to find ways to like poison her, or she's on a red planet, or she's got somebody's got a kryptonite, whatever thing they can hold up and she'll like fall over. Like they keep having to depower Supergirl, and they had to do this in Superman a little as well, because you can't just have them be a god the whole movie. It's not going to work. You got to find ways to like bring them down and challenge them as a hero. And while I thought that stuff was kind of lame, I do want to say when Supergirl like pops off and she gets her power back, it is pretty sick. There is a general feeling in theater like, all right, here we go. Like Supergirl's going to kick ass, and she does. And that rocks. Like Superman has that same vibe. That stuff works good. Every time our super people get their superpowers back and they like fly up into the sky and their laser eyes go red, it's like, yes, here we go. It's going to be good. That stuff rocks. That's fun. That's a good time. But like, man, if you've been going to see comic book movies for the last decade like we have, like it just feels like there's nothing new here to chew on. Yeah, this plot line of teaching the young kid, hey, you can't murder because then that'll make you bad too. I've seen that a billion times in superhero movies. Superhero character who's depowered and has to get their power back. I've seen it a ton, you know, like superhero character doesn't feel like they fit in and is unique in this world that is not really theirs. Like, I get it. Villain of the week, like, it just feels like I've seen it before. And like, that's kind of the movie's biggest problem is it's good. It's just not good enough. We're in an attention economy. If you want 2 hours from people at the movies, you gotta have bars. You gotta bring the gas. And like, this kind of doesn't have it. It's good. It's good. It's just not good enough.
10 years ago, this movie makes $600-700 million. Like this would have been a huge hit. It's about a, you know, a B-level Marvel movie. You know, people remember the MCU a lot better than some of it was. Phase 1 and 2 had a lot of weak films, but it was just exciting to see your favorite characters be made into a film at all. It was new, it was novel, it was exciting. Now, like Zach said, after 40, 50 superhero movies, you don't really care. And Supergirl has the challenge of being a feeling like a derivative of Superman. She's supposed to be a lot different personality wise. I think they do nail that part here. I think Millie Alcock is really good as Supergirl. I think she'll do better in a kind of more supporting role as opposed to having her whole movie, which reminds me, David Corenswet shows up as Superman. He has a couple of cameos, steals the screen every time.
Yeah.
Like we need more of him in this. And so I think I'm sure Supergirl will be in Man of Tomorrow, and that's probably a better place.
It is somehow very fitting that like Supergirl feels kind of smaller in the world and doesn't really fit in, especially next to like her nerd cousin, she says, from the Midwest. And then when he comes on screen, it's like he just immediately steals the show, and you're like, yeah, he is a lot cooler though. Like there's something about Corenswet, right? Like I don't know if it's whatever, it's something about him, but Lobo should have had a bit more of that energy. I wish Supergirl had a bit more of that energy. Like, yeah, she's cool. She's just not cool enough. She doesn't rise above. She doesn't manage to do anything that makes me feel like I got to turn out for Supergirl too. And based on the numbers, it's not going to be one. She's going to be in the team up movie. She'll be in the next superhero movie, whatever. But like, I doubt we're getting a Supergirl too. I want to know. We've got two movies from this new DC, right? Like now, and we've got Clayface coming next, which is very different. It's kind of horror and different. And I think that's smart to do something different and weird. But now we got two superhero movies. How would you advise the board of DC in like what not to, what worked in Superman and what didn't work here that like you need to lane through the next features? Cause like, I don't know. I think this is a good example of like what kind of not to do, you know?
Right. Well, gone are the days of just throwing someone in a cape and making $500 million or $1 billion. Again, Captain Marvel made a billion-dollar film. Aquaman, $1 billion film 10 years ago. people were still into that. So audience chain tastes have really, really changed. And that's the number one thing to recognize. You can't just throw up some, you know, slop on the screen for 2 hours, fill it full of special effects, and hope everyone's going to show up. Those days are gone. Like I said, it was new in 2008 and 2010. Now it's your dad's property. Superhero stuff, oh, that's what my dad or my granddad grew up doing. It's people just aren't as interested. Yeah. Also, there's, and I do feel the need to mention this, there's a lot of just built-in sexism when it comes to female superheroes, and as well, like they're not supported, they don't go, and even though you have a female lead, these movies are still geared towards men and boys, and they just don't support this stuff, sadly. Also, I feel like you don't give the female superheroes, they don't get the A-team. Like, you're not getting James Gunn and Christopher Nolan and Matt Reeves to do female superhero stuff. You're usually getting the B and C team.
Yeah.
Leaving out Patty Jenkins. That doesn't apply to Patty Jenkins, but a lot of times like this, you're getting B and C directors, right, and writers, and you don't have as much creative control, and so you're getting a product that isn't as good also.
Yeah, I think it's something about letting strong creators run in their own direction, right? You look at Gunn with Superman, you look at Matt Reeves with Batman. Step outside of DC, look at Curry Barker and Obsession, right? Look at Kane Parsons in Backrooms. Like, let somebody who's got a vision run with it. And like, I think this feels like it's a little made by committee. This feels a little bit safe. And I think it doesn't work because we've seen so many safe superhero movies. You know what I mean? Like, do something a little risky, do something a little bold. I think that's what worked about Superman. Not for everybody. There's plenty of people who went and saw Superman and thought, that's just another superhero movie. But some of us saw something special there because there was something special there. And like, I just don't see it with Supergirl. Like, I just feel like this looks like a reflection of a reflection of three other superhero movies I've seen. You know, it's too similar. It's too samey. It's too close. It's good. It's just not good enough. Andy, any thoughts or recommendations?
Yeah, a couple. So yeah, there's a lot more bold storytelling you could do with this character, which a lot of people just don't know what to do with, how to make Kara Zor-El her own character. But even in the same comic, there's a part where they visit a planet and they discover that it is essentially a genocide has taken place and half of the inhabitants have been slaughtered. And there's this whole discussion about like the limits of power, because while Supergirl is kind of, you know, all powerful, you can't stop something like this that's already happened, you know, and that's like a very serious theme. Other things is that Supergirl also is known to be a Red Lantern powered by rage. That's another interesting angle that, you know, we don't see anything like that, but would be a super, super cool thing. So there are really interesting storylines that you just have to be bold and do them. But overall recommendations, I would recommend this to, you know, big comic book fans. If you're a fan of Supergirl and you've read the comics, other than that, I would say probably save it for streaming. The plot is just all over the place. It doesn't make a lot of sense. It's really pretty weak. The visuals are pretty solid from time to time. I think the background destruction of Krypton section is really interesting, but a lot of it is just so generic. I think Millie Alcock is really good as Supergirl, and I hope to see her again in Man of Tomorrow and other DC projects. We'll probably see Jason Momoa as Lobo as well. So it's all right. Save it for streaming.
Yeah, it's a streamer for sure. There's no reason to rush to the theater to check out Supergirl. I like it fine. I like Supergirl just fine. You like Superman? You like David Cornsweet? Check out Supergirl. But I don't know. On its own, it just feels kind of like a Marvel movie. Like, it just kind of feels very samey. It feels very safe. It feels like superhero by committee. I'm not into it. It works. It works fine. I like Millie Alcock. I like Jason Momoa. It just doesn't quite work good enough. So that's Supergirl. Save it for streaming or check it out in theaters if you can. Support, you know, superhero movies with chicks at the front of them. We need more chicks in superhero movies. That's good for all of us. And yeah, go girls. Anyway, we should move on. Let's go Supergirls. Whatever. We should move on to our next segment. We're talking about a couple upcoming trailers that we got this week. What do we call this, Andy?
It's time for the trailer park. So we had like 8 trailers and we managed to whittle it down to just 3 of the top ones that came out this week. But big week for trailers. The first one is called Your Mother, Your Mother, Your Mother, which is a new Amazon and MGM feature starring the great Mahershala Ali as a man whose wife has been killed and he must protect his daughter and seek vengeance in Houston, the town of the city of Houston. And this is like an actioner. He's got a sword. He's beating people up. It looks a lot like Blade. Honestly, this looks really cool. Comes out late September. I dug this trailer and the style of it and the action and loved it. He hasn't been in a movie in a while, so I'm looking forward to this.
Yeah, I'm really interested in this. He's a deeply religious hitman. Yeah, who's got deep convictions when his wife and daughter are taken and he has to figure out how to get them back. Yeah, and I love that it's modern. I love that it's set in beautiful Houston, Texas, baby. Like, and yeah, it looks like the movie Mahershala Ali should have been making instead of waiting around to make Blade for Disney, which hasn't happened, and I don't know if it will ever happen. Like, this looks fun. This looks cool. This looks fresh. I don't know. Your Mother, Your Mother, Your Mother might be a banger. What a title, huh? We need to talk about Werewolf. The new Robert Eggers feature has a trailer. It is out. It is so weird looking. Werewolf is a, what, mid-century English story, medieval Britain, of a mysterious creature who stalks a foggy countryside, transforming local folklore into terrifying reality as villagers face an ancient supernatural threat. That's from IMDb. Stars Aaron Taylor Johnson in a very, very strange looking role. A movie that is like not quite black and white, but it's not quite color either. I read it was like omnichrome or something with like black and white grain laid over it to make it look weird. It is everything The Witch and Nosferatu that Robert Eggers has done in the past. It stars tons of freaks. Willem Dafoe, Ralph Ineson, Lily Rose Depp is back in this movie. Kate Dickey's in this movie. All the freaks, they're all here. And it's coming out this Christmas. Man, I was just talking about this before the show. I worry that I'm maybe not really into what Eggers is doing, because the last couple features, Northman and Nosferatu, I liked fine, but something about them I just didn't really connect with in theaters. And watching the trailer for this, it looks a lot like those features. It looks strange for sure and looks cool, but like, I don't know. I need to maybe revisit Nosferatu and watch it again. Like, there's something about this that, like, it's not connecting with me in the way it is other people. I know you're really stoked for it. A couple of people from the show have reached out and said, "Oh my God, this is going to be the coolest movie ever." Why do I feel such hesitation? What do you think?
I'm really excited for this. I think this is an even more extreme step than Nosferatu, which was somewhat, compared to his other films, more commercially kind of viable, palatable, and did well financially. Werewolf looks like an just even more extreme. Like, this takes place in like 13th century England. Everyone's dirty. Like, he's all about getting the period piece stuff right. It looks, you know, and again, what is it going to be about? To me, that's the exciting stuff. It's not like the transformation of the werewolf mythos. It's like, what are the themes? What are we getting at? Just like in Nosferatu. I'm really excited about this. Of course, we have Willem Dafoe in this. I remember reading that Willem Dafoe he started working with Robert Eggers after he saw The Witch, and he just sent him an email and he was like, "Whatever you're doing next, I want in on it." And then he did The Lighthouse. So it turns out it's been a great choice to continue to work with him. I'm super excited for this. It looks disturbing and creepy. I love this grain, this saturated, like semi-color, black and white thing. It looks creepy. Christmas Day release. What? Take the family. It's going to be great.
Bring the kids. Yeah, that's right. It does look cool. The more we talk about it, the more I'm into it. Another trailer, I'll get stoked. We got a lot of time. We got a lot of time before Christmas comes around. Werewolf's going to be a blast. One more to talk about. What do you got?
Not Alone. So this just came out today, this trailer. This is the latest from Illumination Studio behind the Minions franchise. Despicable Me, Sing, all that stuff. Everything they do is just gold. They know how to do kids' cinema, family cinema. This is coming out in April 2027, so next spring, and follows a scientist and a colleague of his that they work on rockets, spaceships. It's a bit of a rom-com. We get this whole rom-com thing. He's like nervous around her, eventually asks her out, see if she wants to get dinner. All this is interrupted by a small group of aliens that crash land on the planet, and then he has to kind of hide and keep safe. So it's like a space adventure, an alien adventure, some rom-com stuff, voiced, funny enough, by the great Timothée Chalamet and also Selena Gomez, who are the leads. I think this is the first big kind of voice work for Timothée Chalamet. Interesting move by him. Could be smart. Like, if this turns into a big thing and it's like a franchise, it could be a really smart move. But interesting for him to do animation. Because like DiCaprio is one of his mentors, and DiCaprio's never done animation or voiceover work. So.
Right.
This is going to be huge. Everything Illumination does turns to gold. So it's going to be exciting stuff. And this is April 2027.
Yeah. We're going to see how Not Alone does. I'm curious because of all the movies that Illumination throws at the front of this slate for Not Alone. It's like from the studio that brought you, and it's like Despicable Me, Minions, Super Mario Movie, right? Sing, The Secret Life of Pets. The one you don't see in there is Migration, which was their last original release. That was the one with the ducks, you remember? That movie kind of didn't do that good. It did fine, I think, but it did not have nearly the success other Illumination features have. And it's not listed. Like, it's a movie they kind of don't point to as like a great success for that studio. And that was the last original feature they did. Like, everything else has been based on a property or some kind of sequel. So this is a new one. This is a new step in a different direction for them to kind of make something different and fresh. And it looks okay. I'm going to be honest. The character designs look a little uninspired, but I think we're going to get some more aliens or something in the future. These cute little neon things, like, they look fine. I heard some people on Reddit being skeptical about Chalamet and Gomez voicing our leads because neither of them have a lot of charisma. And I was at least quick to point out, I can't speak for Selena Gomez. I haven't seen her in a lot. But at least Chalamet puts himself out there in performances like Wonka, where he's like a singing, dancing Candyman. And like, I could see him doing some good voice work for sure. But then the actual voice work of the trailer is like pretty tame. He's not really doing anything wacky. I thought he was going to be like Bill Hader in those Clyde with a Chance of Meatballs movies, right? Your scientist with like wacky hair who's like, and like crazy, you know, crazy, whatever, arms flailing. But like, no, he's this very tall, thin man with a really long head. And he just kind of looks like a boring individual. And then Selena Gomez's character, like, also just kind of looks like a boring scientist lady. So curious to see where they go with this. Looks okay. Like I said, Illumination's kind of a kingmaker in animation right now. Everything they touch turns to gold, excuse me, except for maybe something like Migration. And this will either be another one of those, or this will be some big banger that we get seven movies out of. I'm sure the aliens in this are tailor-made to sell toys and make sequels, right? Like, if they could swing it, they're going to tell tons of stories with whoever's in this movie. But for now, we have a teaser. Looks okay. Looks all right. We're going to see what Not Alone's all about. We have to talk about Jackass, Best and Last, and I'm going to be taking the summary on it. So please excuse any funny delivery. This is Jackass, Best and Last. So it's been 25 years since Jackass kind of got started. That's really what Jackass Best and Last is about, actually, looking at 25 years of the franchise and what they've done and where they've come. And it's weird because it's not quite the fifth film in the franchise, but also it's not really one of those 0.5s either, one of those little half entries they do between movies. And since I saw Jackass Best and Last, I've been telling people, well, you saw Jackass Forever. This is like the 0.5 that comes after that. This is not quite a full feature, but it's some extra stuff that they shot before and maybe a couple new scenes. And then just recently, somebody pointed out that they actually made a Jackass 4.5. It came out in 2022. They already did that. So this is kind of a new thing. But it doesn't manage to reach the same highs as previous Jackass movies for one simple reason. They just didn't shoot a lot for it. They got together for a few days of shooting. It's like a $10 million budget. Doesn't cost a lot of money to make. They shot a few sketches and an intro and some behind the scenes stuff, and then cut in a bunch of old stuff that real Jackass, I say real, hardcore Jackass fans have seen already. And if you haven't seen it, maybe you haven't seen it in a theater, but a lot of this footage has already been out there. So if you're a diehard Jackass fan, you go see this movie and I think you walk away a little disappointed. And if you're a new Jackass fan, you go see this movie and it's not quite as good as any of the other stuff they've done. And it ends up being a love letter to a franchise that's come a long way for sure, and the people who made it, but also a bit of a miss in actually being a proper Jackass project. And that's kind of a shame, especially if this is the end. And as we understand in the movie, and they make very clear, this is the end. We're not doing any more. So let's talk about Jackass Best and Last. Andy, what'd you think?
I felt similarly that in the first four Jackass movies, I've laughed more than I've pretty much ever laughed in a theater. Like, gut busting, can't breathe, can't get a hold of myself, like, kind of laughs at, like, the stunts and, you know, injuries that no doubt happened among these. A lot of the dialogue and the improvisational nature of it all, hilarious. This movie isn't quite as fun, and it's our cast is old. They've been doing this for over 25 years, have sustained a number of injuries and been told, like, you can't keep doing this. You can't get hit by another bull, Johnny Knoxville. Like, you're gonna die. And so the new stuff is a lot, it's not tame, but they're not death-defying stunts anymore. They've kind of leaned into more gross-out humor, which is still funny, but they're missing the big kind of over-the-top stunts that they've done in the previous films. It's kind of sad to see these guys grow up together, and also some of them that originally started with them aren't still around, like Ryan Dunn, who passed away several years ago, Bam Margera, who they had a falling out with, and there were substance abuse issues within the group and also part of the falling out. So it's interesting to see kind of where everything has gone after 25 years. It's bittersweet in a lot of ways.
Yeah, like, it's sad for two reasons. A, it's sad because it's ending and you can see these guys coming into the set, and like we get some early shots in it of them coming arriving at the studio. Okay, this is our last shooting days for Jackass. We're not going to do any more of this after this. And like, they get upset and emotional. You can see the age on them. You know, you can see the wrinkles. You can see Knoxville's hair. Like, and watching Knoxville get choked up about not doing this stuff anymore is genuinely tough, I think, for people who like the franchise. Like, in a weird way, it tugs on your emotional heartstrings because it feels like it's the end of something, like something real, you know, something great. But it's also sad because this isn't a very good Jackass movie. And like, that's a bummer note to go out on, that like the last one ain't that good. You know, like you literally call it best and last and it's probably the worst. And that's a shame. It doesn't work for two reasons. One, the new stuff they shot in a few days isn't that good. It's not that dangerous. And it seems like they cut a lot of stuff. There's a couple people hanging around from the old movies that get so little attention. Namely, like, Rachel Wolfson has been catching a lot of attention on Twitter because she's like the one chick in the Jackass crew now. She gets one stunt in the movie and then she just hangs out. And it, like, they must have shot more with her, but they didn't use it. And like, you see that with a few of the others as well. People who kind of hang out in the background but never really stand out or make any get any attention. Like, there are a couple of guys from the original crew who get beat up, namely Danger Aaron and Dave England, like, get pretty beat up. Steve-O a bit, I guess. Otherwise, like, it's mostly the new people and stuff's pretty light. It's like a trivia game where you get tased if you lose, you know? Like, I've been watching these guys throw around tasers for 25 years. So it doesn't really work. Like, it doesn't really land. Now, the old stuff, the stuff that they show you, can be kinetic. There's an opening sequence here showing an old stunt that has not been shown in theaters. Turns out, I went looking, it was on like three DVDs for like Big Brother stuff. So like, there's people who are like, oh yeah, I can send you a YouTube clip of this thing right now, but I'd never seen it. And it's a crazy stunt. And it's kind of the thing that got Jackass started. Like, it's something really wild, very, very, very kinetic, very, very, very real footage. And then I just feel like the movie doesn't really get that high again. There's a cool intro sequence, I'll admit. I assume they had Spike Jonze in to help shoot that. That was cool. you get a few good looks at like Bam. Some of his footage is in there now, and some Ryan Dunn stuff is in there. But ultimately, like, it's less than some of its parts, and it's weird. Like, I finished watching it, and I came home and immediately fired up like just the first Jackass movie, and like it's just like a night and day difference in energy and style and substance, and like it's tough because these guys are older, and that's what this is about. We can't do this anymore, and I see it, and I get that. But like, man, y'all could have made this a streaming thing or something. You didn't have to put this in theaters and act like this was something bigger than it is, because like it kind of doesn't work. And those other movies have so much confidence and bluster to them that you want to root for these guys. You want to root for Knoxville when he gets on his big red rocket. Here, I just feel bad for him.
Right. What I was thinking about is the progression of this over the last 25 years and kind of how that's changed. This Jackass really comes about because of technology, advances in handheld cameras. We're not lugging around VHS tapes. We got phones. We have, in the early 2000s, we have digital cameras. They're much smaller. That's way easier to DIY films with your friends. And these guys get together and be like, we're going to do super dangerous stunts and try and get noticed and get on TV, be in Hollywood. And for a boy of a certain age, of which I was, between like 50, if you were between like 15 and 20 in the year 2000, you thought these guys were like the coolest thing, doing all these crazy stunts, like no one telling them what to do. Looking back now, you know, 20 years later, I'm like, every single thing they do is so dangerous. And so there's so many injuries that they probably just don't talk about, but that definitely had them. Like Knoxville nearly dies from the bull stunt in the previous film, and everything they were doing even earlier in that. Looking back now, I'm just like, oh my God, you're going to like break a bone, tear a this, rip of that. Kind of thing. But it's interesting to see the progression of how this has come, like what this looks like now. It's like streamers on or streamers and YouTube prank people and reality TV for a number of ways. But it's still not quite what Jackass was, because, you know, YouTube will limit the kind of, you know, craziness you can show, as well as other even streamers and especially TV. And some of the stuff they do, like, you couldn't show it anywhere else besides film, because it's just so insane, so dangerous, and so and too inspiring to the general public. But it's interesting to have seen like how this has changed and where it's gone over 25 years.
Yeah, Knoxville's had 16 concussions, like, which is every one of those is permanent brain damage. It's not like, oh, you can have a few and be fine. Like, no, one is too many. Like, you're supposed to have zero. He's at 16. That last bull hit, which they show again in this movie, which is just brutal. I knew it was brutal. I remember watching it in Jackass Forever and thinking that was like devastating. And then watching it again in here is the same sensation of like, dude, this is too much. They can't keep doing this. After that sketch, after they got him out of whatever, like the stretcher, and got him into the EMT, he went to blow his nose and his right eye fell out of its socket because his orbital socket had been like turned to dust. Like, just they got to stop. And that's kind of what this is. And it's emotional, and it's like that stuff, I think, is thoughtful. Like, the problem is, like, it just doesn't come with the laughs. It doesn't work as good. Like, it's not as funny as it used to be. Somebody pointed out on the Jackass subreddit, it doesn't have nearly like the same punk music drops it used to have. Like, it used to have a lot of like crazy garage band music, you know what I mean, like wild punk tracks, like over stunts. Like, none of those are really in here. We're not really doing that anymore, you know. I like the old footage they show, but I'm like, dude, I've seen it. I've watched those movies over and over again. So this movie ends up being in this weird place where if you're like a hardcore Jackass fan, you're a little bit bored. Like, you can appreciate the emotional kind of thing they're getting out of this, but I think you're a little bored by the footage. And yeah, new fans aren't going to go see it because it's a bunch of old guys doing goofy stuff that they don't understand. So like, I think that's the reason it's kind of underperforming. Like, it just doesn't seem to have the bluster that those other entries have had. And I think it's partly due to the rollout. I remember when they announced this thing, and like Knoxville announced on Instagram, and they kind of said it was partly a clip thing, and that's not. And then Steve-O's on a podcast somewhere, and he's like, oh yeah, it's like a clip show. Like, not good. Like, not good. And it's a shame. It's a shame they couldn't get together a full feature, you know, and do Once More with Feeling or something. But it just seems like no one was committed to that, and they were like, well, we'll just do this, I guess, you know, we'll do whatever this movie is. And I think it ends up landing in this space where like no one's really happy. Like, I think they probably aren't in love with what this is. I think we're not really in love with what this is. It's such a shame. for a series that has had such great numbered entries, for this one to just kind of flop at the finish line, right? Go ahead.
I have some numbers pulled up. So the first Jackass, the movie, again, this starts as a TV show on MTV in the year 2000. It runs for like 1.5 seasons. and then they make Jackass, the movie, in 2002, grosses $64 million. And again, these all cost about $10 million. They're not very expensive. They're just them and their friends. There's no acting. It's all, you know, sketches kind of roughly drawn out. It's film stunts. Then it goes on to make Jackass 3D made $117 million. Jackass number two, $72 million. Jackass Forever, the previous one, $80 million. So these have been very successful for what they are. And then Jackass Best and Last coming in at just under $10 million. It's going to do fine financially because it wasn't super expensive. But yeah, just like the movie, it's kind of petered out. It's like you made one too many.
Yeah. It's hard to believe it kind of got made, honestly. I was reading that there were some theories that Paramount just wanted something else in theaters because their theatrical slate's a little light. But remember, Paramount is like, you know, like MAGA country a little bit. So like the fact that they even let them make this is kind of nuts. Maybe that is part of the reason it's the end. Like maybe it's because the parent company that runs, like, MTV doesn't even really exist anymore, you know? So seeing like MTV Films at the front of this is like a trip back and
bizarre.
I think it's got a self-awareness in that. I don't think it's not trying to be political, but I'm surprised there's still space for this. And I think it's evident that there's not much left. It does feel like time slipping by you. But I do think in that way that this movie does have a message that's sincere. Like when these guys started doing this stuff, you didn't have a phone, like a cell phone, a smartphone that you could whip out and get on the internet, right? Like, so they were all sitting around on couches with nothing better to do than to smoke and drink and play around with these goofy battery cameras they had. Yeah, and film themselves doing stupid stuff and then show the footage to their friends. And a lot of us kind of remember a time like that when you didn't just have a magic box in your pocket that instantly turned dopamine on for you and you had to find ways to entertain yourself. And that's meaningful, like, because that time is still kind of present. We've always been that way. That's what humans are. We have to find ways to goof off and tell stories and make each other smile and make each other laugh. And these guys have managed to do that for years, right? Even with technology, there's a goofy robot gag in here. Like, even as technology's progressed, Jackass 3D, right, uses 3D technology to show you, like, 3D stunts. Even as things have grown and changed, like they have managed to adapt and try new things, but they're too old and they can't keep doing it anymore. And that's obvious. And times are changing and things are changing and it bums me out. And I think this is a love letter to that bit of the human spirit, that you can be a moron with your friends and you can be stupid on purpose for fun, you know, and you can say something dumb to a stranger on the street and you can just have, you can live life looser. And do things differently in a way that you don't have to get a 9-to-5 and go to the same old, same old. I think that's inspiring. I think that's meaningful. That stuff, I think, is the best parts of Jackass Best and Last. But the worst parts are like all the lame stunts that aren't that good. It's a shame. I would love to get on here and tell you the stunts are gas and that I'm wrong and that Jackass Best and Last is good, but it's just fine. It's just a fine entry. I feel like if I was going to tell somebody to check out Jackass, obviously, it would be silly to start at Best and Last, but meaningfully, I would say any of the numbered entries and any of the point fives are better than this. Like it doesn't end up being bigger than it is.
Right. No, I agree. We're missing a lot of the charm and magic, and the youth of it. You know, there's certain things you can just do when you're 20 and a little indestructible. And then you just can't. And again, so many injuries and also just, you know, the recklessness of the time.
Yeah. Like,
are some fun moments.
I can see clips of Knoxville hosting Fear Factor with like contestants doing stunts on the weekly that are notably more interesting and complicated than what's happening here. And it's like, this is Jackass, guys. Like, come on. Like, you're the kings of doing this stuff. And like, I'm glad they're hanging it up, I guess, is the point. If you're going to hang it up, you should do it and do it in a way that's final and in a way that you declare on your terms and they're saying, hey, we're done. We're not doing it anymore. I hope it's true in a weird way. Well, I would love to see more Jackass content at the same time. Like, it would be more meaningful if this really was the end, because they always kind of say this is our last Jackass movie. But I think this really is it. They kind of get right down to it in the interviews and stuff, like, hey, this is it. And people are getting choked up and sad, and I don't know, it's a good time. But Jackass rocks. I'd recommend any of these movies. I gotta know, Andy, would you recommend Jackass Best and Last?
I definitely recommend it to the fans. If you grew up with the show and have seen all the entries, you'll still have a good time. If you're new, I think it's going to be a little bit more of a struggle. So if you're a little on the fence, maybe save it for streaming. It's definitely not a run out and see it in the theater kind of film, but it's got a certain charm for fans of the series. So that's what I would say.
Yeah, I love Jackass, and even I think this one's a bit of a snooze fest. If you love the franchise, totally worth your time. Go see it in the theater, get the popcorn, laugh your head off. Remind people in the theater that aren't laughing that you're supposed to laugh at this stuff. It's a comedy. It's good stuff, but it's not the best Jackass movie. The new stunts they filmed are kind of weak, and the stuff they show is at times powerful, but mostly just stuff you've seen before, and it kind of doesn't work. So it's a shame. I love Jackass. I don't think they're going to make any more. If they do, I'll be first in line to see it. And yeah, Jackass Best and Last. It's fine. It's a serviceable Jackass movie, but a meaningful way to end the franchise somehow, also simultaneously. I don't know. Your mileage will vary. That's Off Script, episode 342. Good God, we've been at it a minute. Just over an hour. Not too shabby, though. What happened to the game? Overtime? Did they win? Did they lose?
We went through overtime. We're in penalties right now, so. Penalty kicks, so they got to go through that, and we'll see who the winner is.
How does penalties work? Do they do like a few on each side, or?
Yeah, you get five each, and best of five, and then you just keep going until someone misses.
Oh my God! All right,
so, well, exciting stuff.
Soccer fans listening to Off Script this week, sorry, we don't have the answers for you. You can find them, I'm sure. You'll be fine. But what do we watch next week, Andy?
We're going to be doing double streaming because of the holiday. Going to be taking a look at Carolina Caroline, which is a new action romance film with Samara Weaving and, oh gosh, I can't remember.
Kyle Gallner, yes.
Thank you. Yeah. who we saw in Strange Darling just a couple summers ago. Great film. And we're also going to be taking a look at The Sheep Detectives, which is available on Amazon Prime, which stars Hugh Jackman as a man who was murdered, and his farm, his sheep, have to solve his murder. This seems like a real silly movie. Apparently, it's really good, and like people talk about tearing up in it. So we're going to be checking that out as well. Some FYI releases, Minions and Monsters comes out today, July 1st. It's going to be the huge thing over the weekend. Enola Holmes 3, the third in that series, comes out this Friday on Netflix. And The Devil Wears Prada 2 is going to be available on VOD. But for next week, Carolina, Caroline, and The Sheep Detective.
If you enjoyed Off Script today, best way to support the show, listen to more. The best way to do more of this thing that we've just done together is just subscribe to the show. Just subscribe to Off Script Film Review on your favorite podcast outlet or on YouTube, where we're uploading the show every week. Let's see, Spotify, iTunes, Google Play, iHeartMedia for the audio edition of the show, YouTube for video, Facebook, Twitter, TikTok, Instagram for social media. Come check out the show. Come get involved. Throw a like on a post, and we'll send you more stuff through the almighty algorithm or whatever, you know, engage. And we're posting new stuff on YouTube every single week. Really exciting things going on over there. We're growing. Things are happening. So thanks to you all for listening. And excited to cover next week. Probably going to be off the week after. I don't know if I probably have not talked to Andy like that like I should have before just saying it out here. But I'm traveling to Michigan that week. So that'll be a whole thing. But next week, Carolina Caroline Sheep Detective is going to be a banger double feature for streaming. Sometimes streaming, we're like having a dig, but like I've heard really good things about both of these. So really excited to talk about it. From all of us at Offscript, website, offscriptfilmview.com. You can email us correspondence direct and mail at offscriptfilmview.com. From all of us at Offscript, the home of Bolt Cinema, I'm Zach Lewis.
And I'm Dr. Draper.
Thanks for watching.